You're listening to Brick to the Future, the property investment show for everyday Australians. We cut through the white noise so you can minimise risk and make smart, informed investment decisions. If you're after tips and strategies while building a property portfolio that suits your lifestyle, you're in the right place.
Welcome back. Today we're here with Open Corp CEO Matt Lewison. G'day Louis, good to see you.
Thanks Boz, good to be here.
Well, we've got you for the heavy hitting stuff because we're, believe it or not, approaching Christmas 2023. Everyone wants to know what are the predictions for the 2024 property market? What are the things that we need to be considering in amongst the economic landscape, the indicators, the external influences, all the things that you believe will have the biggest impact on the market in 2024. So what's the... What are the gems that you've got for our listeners today?
All right. Well, I think we have to start by talking about the fundamentals that drive house prices. And those fundamentals are supply, demand. I mean, that's kind of the no-brainer in economics. Then there's affordability, and then there is sentiment. So those four fundamentals are going to determine how the property market performs in 2024. And when we break those down, I guess the key things that we look at with, let's start with demand. First of all, we have rapid population growth occurring right now in Australia. Now, I don't expect that population growth is going to continue at the same pace that it did in the last 12 months. We know that through 2022 and 2023, there was a return of foreign students or international students coming back to Australia in droves. So that meant that there was a bit of a catch-up from the very low numbers we saw in the preceding 2 years. But let's assume that it just falls back to the same rate of growth that we had pre-COVID. That's still a pretty solid run rate for Australia with 200-plus net overseas migrants each year, positive growth plus 100,000 natural increase. It's pretty solid. So let's just assume that over the next 12 months, things kind of settle back towards that. We're gonna have very solid population growth, and that's what drives underlying demand. Then if we talk to affordability, and I'll come back to supply because affordability has a huge impact on this, as does sentiment. Over the last 18 months, we've seen a really rapid interest rate rising cycle. The Reserve Bank has been on a mission to tame inflation, and they've put interest rates up, I think, 13, 14 times already. So that is obviously affecting affordability. It's making it harder for people to qualify for a loan. The other thing that's affecting affordability is the interest rate serviceability buffer of 3%. Pre-COVID, it was back at 2%, even 1% 7 or 8 years ago. So the hurdle that people need to jump and clear in order to borrow money to buy a house is a lot higher. And higher interest rates and a higher serviceability buffer are designed to do one thing: reduce the number of new homes that get built. That's one of the main goals of rising interest rates in the Reserve Bank, because they feel that if they can reduce the number of homes getting built, it takes inflation pressure out of the housing construction market, which reduces inflation pressure in other parts of the economy. Now, I wanted to talk about that before supply and also before sentiment, because when interest rates go up and people are worried or people are fearful of interest rates going up, then the sentiment diminishes. So right now we have almost all-time low sentiment, at least for the last 20 years. We're back at levels that are around or lower than what they were during the GFC, and they've been down for longer than they were during the GFC. So sentiment across Australia is incredibly low, and that's also holding people back from making big purchase decisions like buying houses. So we've got interest rates and serviceability buffer making it harder for people to qualify for a loan to buy or build a new house. And we've got sentiment at all-time lows, making people kind of cautious about buying a property. And we've all heard the saying, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. And one of the reasons for that is that those two forces that in fundamentals I've just talked about are reducing supply. They're stopping Australians from signing contracts and from starting construction. So we're seeing building approvals dropping down to a rate of about 130,000 a year. And the target is over 200,000 a year. So these forces, these fundamentals that are affecting affordability and affecting sentiment are reducing supply, which means that next year there'll be less supply coming to market. The year after there'll be less again, because there is a 12 to 24 month lag from getting an approval to delivering a house that someone can live in. So what does that all mean? Rising demand and shrinking supply. It means that the formula for additional price growth is well and truly there. Now, we also know, I'm a student of history, in particular around the housing market. And when you go back to the 1970s, the really rapid house price growth occurred just after inflation started to come down. Prices remained stable and didn't go down while inflation was high and while interest rates were really high. But as those interest rates stabilized and wages continued to grow after that inflationary bout, like we're seeing now in Australia, wages growth is accelerating while inflation's coming down. People's purchasing power increased, their sentiment improved, the affordability improved, and there was a huge run on house prices, causing house price growth and rental growth in the next 4 to 5 years. So when you're looking ahead at 2024, and while there may be another interest rate rise, there might be two, but again, people are being assessed on 12 interest rate rises. So in order to qualify, you need to be able to afford not just the current interest rate, but the current interest rate plus 12 more quarterly or 25 basis point interest rate increases, which is a huge buffer. And obviously that's what people have been assessed on for the last 6 to 9 months as well. So affordability is a lot better than it would actually be in terms of what people have to pay to service an interest rate, or their interest rates is a lot better than what they get assessed against. And that means that if that interest rate buffer comes down or interest rates stabilize and sentiment improves, we're going to see pretty solid house price growth, particularly in the affordable markets where renters have been paying more and more. So rents are going up in the last 6 months a lot faster than interest rates have been, and they'll continue to go up really quickly next year. And it's at the point now where we're starting to see a lot more reports of suburbs and houses being cheaper to buy than to rent. And again, incredible formula. Start seeing people shifting out of the rental market, desperate to get into the housing market to save money. And that's also going to have put upwards pressure on house prices. So there's a great mix of positives for Australia's housing market, and the handbrake is the fear of interest rates more so than the actual interest rates. It's the fear of interest rates going up that's feeding into sentiment and keeping a lid on house price growth at the moment.
Yeah, great summary. Obviously around the fundamentals and the impact that they all have. I think if I think about the media and what they report the stuff that the things that gets the eyeball. So it's about the rental crisis, it's about the house price growth, it's about price crashes in a negative environment, it's about inflation, interest rate rises, all these things. One thing that we talk a fair bit about that is not well understood or kind of recognized, thrown in the mix, if you like, is the wage growth and just how much that's changed in recent years. I know I was over in Europe in the middle of the year. Australian house prices are cheap compared to some of these other, older, larger capital cities, specifically London and Paris I'm thinking of. The wage growth helps support those moving forward. Can you talk to the wage growth side of things a little bit?
Absolutely. And look, there's two parts to this. There's more than two parts. I shouldn't put a number on it. Firstly, we're seeing much higher wage growth. We're seeing people working more hours. And obviously, wage growth is often reported on an hourly rate basis and on an ordinary wages, as opposed to wages plus commissions and bonuses. And we've seen a lot of businesses around Australia favoring commissions and bonuses. So households are earning more from commissions and bonuses than they would have otherwise, or pre-COVID. So we're also on top of that seeing the workforce grow. There's a million more people working in Australia today than there was just before COVID hit. A million more. There's certainly not a million more houses in Australia in the last 3 years, but there's a million more people earning a wage, and those wages are higher and they're working more hours. So more people in the workforce working more hours, earning more per hour, plus bonuses and commissions, means people's spending capacity is a lot higher. And not to kind of minimize the fact that, yes, there has been inflation in a lot of items, but many of those items have actually started to see deflation now as well. Not all of them, but some of those things. So cost of living is improving when you factor in that wages are now growing faster than a lot of the household items that people need to spend. An outlier of that is rents. Rents are continuing to go up. So people who are in the rental market are being hit harder than people outside of the rental market. Now, if you work on the basis of, I guess, a household earning 100,000, then on average around Australia today, those households are earning $12,000 to $15,000 a year more than they were before they went into COVID. So that's obviously been a big improvement for a lot of households that's offset some of that cost of living. We also know that coming up in 1st of July of 2024, that the stage three tax cuts are going to come through as well. And that's going to reduce the amount of tax people pay. So that's like getting, for some households, up to $7,000 a year extra after tax. And for kind of the majority of households, it's going to be a couple of thousand dollars extra in their pocket. That's like a free pay rise. So yeah, that is having a huge impact, and likely to have an impact next year as well. And probably one other thing that, you know, when we talk about affordability, I mean, the Queensland government has just announced that they're doubling the first home buyer grant for the next 2 years. So for people building or buying a brand new property, they're going to get $30,000. There's also a range of other government schemes, one that enables people to borrow money with an incredibly high LVR and save $10,000 to $15,000 on lender's mortgage insurance by having the government underwrite that mortgage insurance for free, meaning that the amount of deposit needed to get into the housing market for first home buyers is a lot less today than it was. So again, coming back to that the comment I made earlier, that it's cheaper to buy than rent in some suburbs around Australia right now, many, in fact. The biggest obstacle is getting a deposit. And if the government can reduce the amount that you need to come up with and almost make it $0, then it's literally just a question of, would you rather pay your mortgage or pay rent to somebody else if you're a tenant? And we're going to see a shift, I suspect, in the next 12 months there as well.
Yeah, great. You kind of anticipated my next question. So you were talking about the stage three tax cuts that are coming in 1 July 2024, and the very recent announcement around the first home buyer side of things. But are there any upcoming or recent policy or regulation changes that you think will have a notable impact on the property investment landscape in 2024?
I think they're the main ones. There are a range of things that the government's been doing for the last few years that, to be honest, have contributed greatly to the housing crisis that we have right now. One of those is the interest rate serviceability buffer being raised. Understandable when you could borrow for 2%, that they would increase the buffer to 3% to just make sure that when interest rates went up, people weren't going to be getting caught out. But now that interest rates, people are borrowing around 6% or more, and they're being assessed at 9%, it seems extremely conservative. And as I touched on at the start, it's holding people out of the market, and it's affecting housing supply. It's making it harder for people to sign a contract to build a new property, which would alleviate some of the housing stress that particularly renters are faced with right now. There are other things that the government's talking about, which is mostly in the planning space. They've announced that they want to build 1.2 million houses, or they want Australia to build 1.2 million houses in the next 5 years from mid-2024. That's 200,000, in fact, 240,000 a year for that five-year period. And we're aiming, or we're on track for about 130,000 building approvals in the next 12 months if things don't turn around rapidly. So that kind of talks to the fact that there is a huge crisis the government is aware of, and they're setting an ambitious target. Now, we've never built 240,000 homes in 2 years running. We've made it close once in around 2016 before the government started loading up with disincentives for people to buy or invest in property. And those disincentives were not just the interest rate serviceability buffer, but higher hurdles for investors, a premium interest rate for property investors, a premium interest rate for interest-only loans, changes in standing.
90% for investors for a period of time. They reduced the LVR.
100% lower LVRs. Changes to stamp duty laws and concessions to, again, make it harder for investors to participate in the housing market. And again, those things shrunk the size of the market. They stopped new developments from getting off the ground, contributing to the housing undersupply. And they took workers, as a result of those diminished approvals, they took workers out of the housing construction market, and they redeployed them into government infrastructure projects. So they were no longer there to enable houses to get built. So we have a huge problem in Australia with this housing crisis, and overcoming it is not as simple as making an announcement that we want to build 240,000 homes a year for the next 5 years. And it's certainly not as simple as saying we're going to give local councils cash incentives to speed up approvals or to rezone land, because even rezoning land takes 3 to 5 years before it increases any supply in that area, because land isn't always owned by the appropriate entity. It might not be owned by a developer yet. They're going to wait until it's rezoned, then they buy the land, then they go through design approvals, tendering, pre-sales. It takes many years for that housing supply to be corrected. So I guess what I would expect to see, I guess other things that we might be seeing in the next 12, 24 months is going to be a lot of generic statements coming out of the government talking about what they think others should do or that they're doing to combat the housing crisis, but not a lot of concrete actions. The real actions that they could take to actually make a change would be to start evening the field, to enable investors to participate more in the housing market, and to enable more homes to be built. And in the absence of that, and even if they do make that announcement in the next 6 to 12 months, again, it's going to be a couple of years before we see any correction in the amount of supply that's coming to market. So it's a challenging time for renters, and I think the amount of housing stress we're seeing in that rental market, the amount of homelessness that's coming off the back of that, people getting squeezed out of the rental market, is incredibly sad. Could have been avoided, and I guess the flip side of that is that it means that today in 2024 is one of the safer times I've ever seen for a property investor. I mean, there's absolutely no question that producing a house or buying a house, you'll be able to secure a tenant, that you will have long tenure, that you'll continue, you'll be in a very solid position to pay your mortgage. And obviously I'd love to see more investors being able to help to alleviate the housing crisis for those people in the rental market or that are priced out of the housing market right now. And yeah, I guess the solutions I think are there. There are options there for the government. I don't think they'll necessarily take them. But I think, as I said, for investors weighing up whether to get in 2024, I have never seen a better time. And the key though is to focus on those areas that are affordable. Remember, these are the areas that get the government grants for first home buyers. So there's more competition where rents are rising most rapidly. As people get priced out of expensive properties, they try to find cheaper ones, and it means the cheaper properties become more expensive very quickly. And it's also where you're going to have the highest rental yield relative to the purchase price. And we're seeing it in the markets that have performed really well in the second half of 2023. They're the affordable cities, and the affordable markets within those cities are massively outperforming the more premium markets. And while we might see in 2024 those premium markets starting to come off, and we're going to see less house price growth in the premium markets, and that might feed through to, I guess, what might be perceived as stagnation in the median house price. That's going to be playing out, while at the same time, the cheapest 25% of suburbs in Australia are going to be going up in price very rapidly, as they have for the last 6 months.
Amazing insights as always, Matt. The one that I think can have the biggest impact most quickly is absolutely that buffer. It occurred to me while you were talking, maybe some people don't know what the interest rate serviceability buffer is. In short, if you go to apply for a loan today, and let's say that loan has an interest rate of 7%, then while you might be paying 7%, the bank is assessing your ability to repay it as if interest rates were 10%. So a 3% serviceability buffer means that's how much higher the bank is assessing you at. So yeah, very understandable when we're at record low interest rates, given that rates had to move up. That's obviously part of the due diligence of APRA. Now we're at this point where the majority of the rate rises have occurred. 3% is a really, really big buffer. And especially as we've talked about in previous episodes, that the holding costs on investment properties are up less than $100 a week, despite all these increases. So if there are motivated mum and dad investors out there, you know, we're responsible for providing the rental supply in Australia. That's a way that we can start to make a positive dent in this housing crisis and bring more supply to market. But as you say, it's not a quick exercise. That imbalance for us as investors is going to be in our favor for the foreseeable future. Supply and demand is well and truly balanced the way we like it, to see growth and again re-emphasizing the importance on the affordable markets, given that the pressure will come upwards from the bottom. So thanks for joining us today, Matt. Always great to get your insights.
Thanks, Foz.